I actually want to start with a little bit of an introduction, really very, very quick introduction to the structure of Tanakh overall, because we often refer to various parts of Tanakh in different ways, and we have certain books that we call the Megillot, and we have Nevi'im Rishonim and Nevi'im Achronim, and we have, of course, Tanakh, Torah, Nevi'im and Ketuvim, and we talk about 24 books of Tanakh. So it's always important to kind of sort out where we are in the scope of things. And this is a little chart that I once put together, which has the listing of all 24 books of Tanakh. And as you can see, there are in fact, the way we have our Tanakh structured, there are more than 24 books, because all of Treyasar is in itself 12 books. But they're what is referred to in the liturgy as the minor prophets. They're not minor in terms of their importance or stature, they're just minor or small in size. And so they were all put together in one book called Treyasar or Shnemasar. And so if you look at the structure of the 24 books of Tanakh, you'll see the five books of the Torah. There are eight books of Nevi'im, four referred to as Nevi'im Rishonim. That's where we're going to spend our time. Yeshua, Shoftim, Shmuel, and Malachim. The division of Shmuel into two books and Malachim, Kings, into two books is not of Jewish origin. That was introduced in the, I'm not sure if it predates the King James version of the Bible, but it's certainly not of Jewish origin. In our Masoret, they're one book each, Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, Yechezkel, Treyasar. And then Ketuvim, and Ketuvim has also three sections. It has Tehillim, Mishlei, and Iyov, which are the first three books. And they are books of philosophy and theology and prayer. I often think of them as they're referred to this way in the liturgy. If you look at the Rashi Tevot of the first three letters of the three books of Ketuvim, they spell the word Emet backwards. If you can see that, Aleph, Mem, Taf. And that's because they are, and they're referred to as Sifrei Emet, because they have their own trup, they have their own cantillation structure, and the books of philosophy, and they, you know, philosophy and theology is always elusive, so the acronym is backwards. But that's just an easy way to remember them, Tehillim, Mishlei, and Iyov. Then you have the five Megillot, which are listed in the order, not as the Gemara describes them. The Gemara had a different order to them. They are listed in our Tanakhs in the order in which we read them publicly over the course of the year cycle, starting with Pesach, Shir HaShirim, Shavuos Rus, Tisha B'Av, Sukkos, and then Purim. And then the three books that relate to Shivat Zion, or the return to Israel after Galut Bavel, you have Book of Daniel, which those who were with us studied together over the course of a year, the Book of Ezra and Nehemiah, which is one book, although in the Christian Bible it's divided into two, and the Book of Chronicles, Divrei Hayamim, which again is divided into two, but not in Jewish sources. So those together make up the 24 books of Tanakh. Just as an observation, Nevi'im Rishonim and Nevi'im Achronim, earlier prophets, later prophets, as it's translated, is a mistranslation. Nevi'im Achronim are not necessarily later chronologically than Nevi'im Rishonim. In fact, if you look at Treyasar, certainly Yeshayahu, parts of Yirmiyahu, and all of Treyasar up until certainly Habakkuk, probably Tzfanya 2, all of that is contemporary to the book of Malachim Bet, the book of Kings. And so there is certainly overlap. They're called earlier prophets and later prophets only because of their sequence in Tanakh. Right? These are the first four, and these are the latter four in the sequence of Nevi'im. What divides them or separates them is that these four, Yeshua, Shoftim, Shmuel, Malachim, are the narrative of Tanakh. They are the narrative, the story of biblical history from entrance into the land of Israel till the destruction of the first temple. Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, Yechezkel, Treyasar, these are the books of the Nevi'im. These are books of the works, the writings of the prophets, the speeches of the prophets. It's like the difference between writing a book of history and collected speeches of Yeshayahu, collected speeches of Yechezkel, Yirmiyahu, or etc. So some of them are contemporary, some of them even mentioned in the book of Malachim. Yeshayahu is mentioned in the book of Malachim, and so are some of the other Nevi'im. But they are collected Nivuot, and Malachim is Malachim Ben in particular, is the arena, the history, the scenarios around which they operate. Divrei Hayamim is a chronicle of biblical history from Bereshit till Ezra, and repeats much of what appears in the books of Shmuel and Malachim, although with some minor variations here and there, not our subject for today. So more or less, this is a way of seeing the whole structure of Tanakh and understanding where we are. It's also my cheat sheet for how to remember the 24 books of Tanakh, because if you divide it this way, it becomes very easy to focus on where we are. And we're starting right here from the beginning in Yoshua Perek Aleph. So that is our chart. And this map we will be using throughout our study of Sefer Yoshua, probably Shoftim as well. I'll talk a little bit about that map a little bit later. Right now, it's going to be on almost every shear that we have in Yoshua and Shoftim. This is the map we're going to operate with. And we are going to start right from the beginning. Vayi achrei mot Moshe eved Hashem. Vayomer Hashem al Yoshua ben Nun misharet Moshe lemor. It was after the death of Moshe, God's servant. God said to Yoshua ben Nun, Moshe's assistant, Moshe's minister, Moshe's misharet, whatever you want to translate that word. And he says to him, Moshe avdi met, Moshe, my servant, has died. V'ata kum avor et hayarden hazeh. Cross over this Jordan. They're on the other side of the Jordan. Yoshua picks up literally where Chumash leaves off, in the end of the Devarim. And we are at the point in which they're ready to cross the Yarden. Come, cross over into the land which I have given them. And then he continues a promise about all places where you go, I will give to you. As I spoke to Moshe, and he gives them the borders of the land, from the wilderness and this Lebanon to the great river, to the Euphrates, the Eretz Achitim, which is today all of Turkey, and Ve'adayam Agadom of Hashemesh, Yegbuchem. We're going to unpack the borders of the land of Israel in a separate shir. So for now, I really want to focus on some background, but I wanted to pick up at the beginning on this first pasuk. Yoshua begins, the book of Yoshua begins with, really, it's a fascinating verse. Vayehi acharei mot Moshe eved Hashem, vayomer Hashem el Yehoshua ben Nun misharet Moshe lemor. So there are two people in this pasuk. There is a Moshe who is described as eved Hashem, and there is Yoshua who is described not as eved Hashem, not as the leader of the Jewish people, not as the head of the tribe of Ephraim. Yoshua is described simply as Misharet Moshe. The continuity, the connection between Yoshua and Moshe is self-evident in this pasuk, and it's very dramatic that that's how the Sefer begins. And we're going to unpack, as we continue through our study of the book, why that's so important for Yoshua and for Israel. What is the connection between them? Yoshua ben Nun misharet Moshe, and that's how we begin. And we're from here. I want to take a leap backwards, and start with the basic question: who is Yoshua, and why Yoshua was chosen to lead Bnei Israel into after Moshe's death? Beyond what we all know is the story of the Meraglim. And now, after the story of the Meraglim, two people emerged to enter into the land of Israel, Kalev and Yoshua. Yoshua was chosen to lead the people. Kalev was chosen for other purposes, for other reasons. Beyond that, there's much more to the story of Yoshua that is beneath the surface, and that's where I want to go today. Who is Yeshua, and why is Yeshua the one to lead the people after the death of Moshe, especially given the fact that Yeshua is not from the tribe of leadership? Who is the tribe of leadership from Yaakov's moment when he blesses his children onwards? The tribe of leadership is Yehuda. And amongst the questions that need to be asked is, so if Moshe is no longer going to lead them as the Navi, as the main, as the chief prophet and redeemer, then why isn't somebody from the tribe of Judah? Why is it Dafka Yehoshua ben Nun from Shevet Ephraim? That's an interesting question too. So what is it about Yeshua? What do we know about him, his background and history? And Dafka, the very, you know, sometimes it's important to go back to the very first time we meet somebody. When we first meet Moshe in Perek Bet of Shemot, we are given a very dramatic understanding of who he is, where he comes from, and why he's there, and what role he plays in his personality, and his and why God chose him. Chapter 2 of Shemot sort of lays out the plan of why Moshe. It's self-evident. Yeshua, on the other hand, is less self-evident. The very first place Yeshua is ever mentioned in Chumash, the very first reference to Yeshua in Chumash, is an odd place to find him. We're going to jump now. I'm going to start jumping tabs. So everybody's following me along with the tabs. We're all good. Give me a thumbs up. Okay. Hopefully my computer will behave today. The very first place we find Yeshua is in Shemot, Perek Yud Zayin. The immediate aftermath of the story of the rock in Parsha B'Shalach, Vayavor Amalek, Vayelachem, Yisrael B'Refidim, in the attack of Amalek in Refidim. Vayomer Moshe El Yehoshua. Moshe turned to Yeshua and said, B'char lanu anashim v'tzei lachem ba'amalek. Go take men and go fight against Amalek. I'll stand at the top of the hill, I'll take the staff of God in my hands, and we together you'll fight on the ground, and I will fight in the heavens with the staff. And that's what Yeshua did. He fought against Amalek. Moshe, Aaron, and Hur, they stood at the top of the hill, and we all know the story. When Moshe's hands were down, they were losing. When Moshe's hands were up, they were prevailing, and his hands were weak because they had to be held up all the whole battle, and so they supported. Pasuk Gimel, Ve'achalosh Yehoshua at Amalek ve'tamol lefi charev. Yehoshua weakened Amalek and his people by the sword. Notice it's not a victory here. There is a weakening of Amalek. That's also an important observation. And then Vayomer Hashem Moshe, this is the conclusion. K'tov zot zikaron b'sefer, write this in a book, v'sim be'oznei Yehoshua, and place, give it over to Yehoshua, tell it to Yehoshua. Ki machom ched zecher Amalek mitachat Hashemayim. I will destroy Amalek. Yeshua is fascinating. So right from the very first moment that we find Yeshua, what role do we find him in? We find him in the role of a commander of an army that Moshe tells to go and fight Amalek. Now we know from later verses that Yeshua has additional roles. He's Mishiret Moshe. He sits in Moshe's tent. He doesn't leave his tent. But right here, the very first reference to Yeshua, again, there's all kinds of midrashim, and there's, of course, the famous movie of made by Cecil B. DeMille that places Yeshua in the midst of the story of the Exodus, all kinds of other references. But in Chumash and in Tanakh, the very first reference to Yeshua is he's leading the battle against Amalek, and he's told that this is going to be the continuing role that he will play, the symbols ne Yehoshua. So that's fascinating. We don't even know who he is. In fact, it's such a mystery as to who he is at this point in the story that he's not even identified as Yeshua bin Nun. The very first reference is Vayomer Moshe El Yeshua. Who is Yeshua? When Yeshua? Why Yeshua? Yeshua bin Nun? Okay, I understand, but who is he? And if we look in the what's Yichus? What tribe is he from? Who is his father? Who is his grandfather? Who is his great-grandfather? How old is he? None of this is told to us here. However, we have certain clues that are important to identify. If I look in Divrei Hayamim, Perek Zayin, and we're going to come back to this chapter in Divrei Hayamim, Perek Zayin a few times today, but for now, our purpose here is to identify Yehoshua and his Yichus. And so the Psukim and Divrei Hayamim, Perek Aleph, Perek Zayin, are a part of a series of chapters that chronicle the lineage of each of the tribes of Yaakov, all the tribes of Israel. And in this reference, Pasuk Chaf begins with the story of Bnei Ephraim. So I want to pick up, Yeshua we know is from Shevet Ephraim. Bnei Ephraim, I'll come back to the earlier psukim. There's a lot to unpack in these psukim. These psukim are really very, very important for us and very complex. But just the end of it for now, the list of the children of Ephraim, Refach Beno, the generations after Ephraim, Refach Beno, Reshef Beno, Telach Beno, Tachan Beno. This is one generation after another. La Adan Beno, Amihud Beno, Elishama Beno, Nun Beno, Yoshua Beno. So here I have information that I don't have anywhere else. That not only is Yoshua son of Nun, but Yoshua ben Nun from the tribe of Ephraim, but who is Yoshua's grandfather? Yeshua's grandfather is Elishama ben Amihud. Anybody remember who Elishama ben Amihud is? Elishama ben Amihud is the Nasi of Shevet Ephraim. He is the head of the tribe of Shevet Ephraim, which means that Yeshua was not just Yeshua ben Nun. Yeshua ben Nun was the grandson of the Nasi of Shevet Ephraim. That means that his stature is really quite more, much more significant than simply a random Ephraimite that Moshe told to go and fight. He is the grandson and of warrior age, right? So he's young. The Nesim generally were of the older generation. So his grandson is the head, is the person that Moshe turns to fight against Amalek. Yeshua ben Nun ben Elishama ben Amihud. So that already tells me that there's something fascinating about the story of Yeshua that I didn't know before. That he's the grandson of the Nasi of Shevet Ephraim. And as I begin to explore this further, we have to explore not just who Yeshua is, and that we will, Bezrat Hashem, do next week, but also why the tribe of Ephraim, why the tribe of Yosef, to lead Bnei Yisrael into the land of Israel. I would have thought that's the task of Shevet Yehuda. And there was certainly, Kalev ben Yefuneh was certainly from tribe of Judah. Between Yeshua and Kalev, I would have assumed the choice would have fallen on Kalev's shoulders because he's from Shevet Yehuda. Why Ephraim? Why Menashe? Why Bnei Yosef? That's the question I want to start with today. So we're going to park this reference to that Yeshua is the grandson of Elishama ben Amihud, and we're going to come back to it next week in terms of who Yeshua the man is. And for today, I want to step back and ask the question, who is Ephraim the tribe? And why does the tribe of Ephraim slash Yosef merit to lead Bnei Israel into the land of Israel after the death of Moshe?
Neched of Rachel.
Excuse me?
Is the Neched of Rachel.
He is the Neched of Rachel. So is Yosef, Abed Yosef Binyamin, and you have, and from Yaakov's day, you have a designation of Yehuda as the tribe of Leosur Shevet Miyudam Chokek Ben Maglav. So I still think there's, again, not far afield, but I want to explore Ephraim and Manasseh in particular, and in particular their connection to the land of Israel. Now, I'll make the observation. This actually, this time I don't need it. I will make the observation that part of this we've actually looked at once before, a number of years ago, if you were with us when we in one of the Parshas Shiurim. And some of this, if it's familiar to you, will be an overlap from that shiur. And if it's not, if it's as one of my favorite comedians, Victor Borge, used to say, those of you who have heard this before will enjoy hearing it again. And those of you who have never heard it will enjoy hearing it again next time. So that's the line from Victor Borge. Okay, so let's understand. Who is Ephraim? And where is this story coming from? I want to stay in Divrei Hayamim for now, for a moment. Now, for the purpose of reference, these psukim in Divrei Hayamim I put on the source page, so you have them on the source page itself. I've highlighted some pieces of the story as well. So let's just focus here for a moment. Those psukim in Divrei Hayamim we read as follows: Ubnei Ephraim shutalach, ubered bino, v'tachat bino, ve'elada bino, v'tachat bino. There's a very big machloket in the Mefarshim when in Divrei Hayamim it lists the names of one after the other with the word bino in it. Are they all sons of one generation? Meaning Ephraim has the following children, Shutelach. And Shutelach has Bered and Tachat and Elada and Tachat. Or are these multiple generations? Shutelach and Bered are his sons, and then Tachat is their son, and Elada is his son. And, right? You understand the question? That's a question that's I can't resolve now because different places do it differently. Like the ending list is clearly sequential. Right? Yoshua is the son of Nun, and Nun is the son of Elishama is the son of Amihud. That list is clearly sequential. The opening list may or may not be sequential. I leave that as an open question. But for now, Zavad b'no, Shetelach b'no, ve'ezer ve'elad. Says the text, "V'haragum anshei Gat hanoladim ba'aretz ki yardu lakachat et miknehem." These were slain by the residents of Gat, born in the land, because they came to take their cattle. Now, this is one of the most ambiguous phrases in the story. Probably in many chapters. Who killed whom? Anshei Gat killed somebody of the children of Ephraim. Unclear who. Haragum, right? Because I have so many different generations. Maybe it's Ezer and Elad. Last two mentioned. But in all cases, somewhere, Anshei Gat, Gat is in the area of Goliath is from the city of Gat. Gat is a city in referred to in Tanakh as one of the cities of the Plishtim. And they killed somebody from the house of Ephraim because they came to take their cattle. Vait Abel Ephraim Avihem Yamim Rabim. Ephraim, their father, mourned many days. Vayevo Echav L'Nachamo. His brothers came to bring him comfort, to be Menachem Avon. For Hevorel Ishto v'tavet elet ben, Ephraim therefore has another child, v'ikrat shmo Bri'ah, he calls that child Bri'ah, ki bira'ay tabaveto, because he lost the children who were killed by Anshei Gat, so he has another child, and he refers to him as Bri'ah. And he has a daughter, uvito, or granddaughter, uvito she'era, and she, vativen et bet choron tachton, ve'et ayon, she builds the cities of bet choron elyon, bet choron tachton, and uzen she'era, all three of these cities are biblical cities, they're all more or less around the area of Har Ephraim or Shechem today. And then we have the rest of the list. Renefach b'no, v'nesha b'no, v'telach b'no, v'tacha b'no, ladan b'no, miyud b'no, l'shema b'no, nun b'no, yoshua b'no. Simple question. Who are these children that are killed by plishtim, hanoladim ba'aretz, and the children of Ephraim, because Ephraim is mourning for them? When did this take place? So there's a Medrash Chazal, which on a pshat level is very difficult to process, that this is a reference to a group of Bnei Ephraim who left Egypt early. And that quotes the Medrash, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Chazal Darshut Zal, Ki Zeh Haya Kodem Yitziat Mitzrayim, Shemanu At Haketz, V'Tao V'Yatzu B'lo Yitam B'Kara Lahem Zeh. Sages say that this was before the Exodus. There was a group of Ephraimites who calculated erroneously. They left before the time. This is they were killed. And the Gemara also suggests that they were in the, they're the bones that Yechezkel revives in his prophecy of Atzamot Yevishot. But that is a very difficult reference to support in Pshat, because who is mourning for them when they died? Ephraim. Right? We eat the Bel Ephraim Avihem. There's only one Ephraim in this story, and this is Ephraim, grandson of Yosef. So, where, son of Yosef, right? Ephraim and Manasseh. So, where is this is a, must be an earlier story. The Radak says, Ani omer ki maseh zeh haya bamidbar o be'eretz hagilad. This story must have taken place either in the land of, in the desert, or in the land of Gilad. Everybody know where the land of Gilad is? We're going to need this reference in a minute. The land of Gilad is essentially the area north of the Yabok River, up through the Yarmouk River, into what is today known as the Golan Heights, Eretz Geshur, Eretz Bashan, Har Hermon. Right, this area here is the Golan Heights. This whole region here is known as the Gilad, all the way down to the Yabok River. The edge of the Gilad, it's a mountain range, comes down to the Yabok River. So this is the Gilad, says Yeshua, says the Radak, maybe this is happening in Eretz Gilad. Why in Eretz Gilad? He doesn't explain. How Ephraim comes to Eretz Gilad, doesn't explain. But he does say, Vayad dain Ephraim chai. Ephraim was still alive. And it's possible that Ephraim was still alive. Ki machir ben Menashe haya mikovshei Eretz Gilad. Machir ben Menashe was one of the conquerors and settlers of the land of Gilad. Hold that thought. That's going to be very important for us. That jumps to Shevet Menashe. We're going to see the flip side of the coin in a second. Shevet Menashe. And he quotes a verse. It's a pasuk in Bereishit that says that Yosef saw the his own grandchildren, meaning great grandchildren. Yosef So you have Ephraim and Menashe, and you have Machir ben Menashe, grandson of Yosef, and you have the children of Machir ben Menashe who Yosef saw. So the children of Machir ben Menashe, says the Radak, were still alive at the time of Yosef. It must be that this reference here is to children of Ephraim. Ephraim is still alive. So it can't be that far into Yitziat Mitzrayim. Now, again, the implication of this is astounding, just to understand how significant it is in the Medrash, which is uncomfortable with the notion that I'm about to share with you. The Medrash suggests that this Machir ben Menashe, who was born in the days of Yaakov Avinu, died after Moshe Rabbeinu, which makes him several hundred years old. Again, Medrash does that because the alternative is really quite amazing. The alternative is that this Bnei Ephraim were killed by Plishtim in Eretz Gat, were where? They were in the land of Israel during the time of Shibud Mitzrayim. Let me say that again. Ephraim is mourning the death of his children at the hands of Plishtim in the land Nolodim Ba'aretz, Anshei Gat. And then his daughter, She'erah, goes and builds three cities, Beit Choron Tachton, Beit Choron Elyon, and Uzun She'erah, which are all more or less around the area of Shechem Har Ephraim. Okay? And that is happening within the lifetime of Ephraim. Where are the rest of the tribes of Israel during the lifetime of Ephraim, who's born in Egypt? They're in Egypt. You understand what the implication is? Yosef's grandchildren are navigating through, settling and building cities in the land of Israel, while the rest of the in the area of Shechem, while the rest of the tribes are in Egypt in slavery. You understand the implication? It's mind blowing, but I'm just reading what it says. B'nai Ephraim were killed by Plishtim in the land of Israel, and his son, he has another child who has a daughter, She'erah, and she goes and builds cities as a kind of right, in the land of Shechem, in the land of Har Ephraim, Beit Choron Elyon, Beit Choron Tachton, and Uzun She'erah. Mentioned later in Tanakh, various places in Har Ephraim. But if they're grandchildren of Ephraim, this is all happening during the early half of the sojourn of Israel in the land of Egypt. Now, it makes sense when you consider the fact that Yosef was royalty. Ephraim and Manasseh were royalty. They had free reign, free access, could come and go as they choose. And it was Yosef who insisted to his brothers that they take his bones back. It was Yosef who insisted to his brothers that they connect themselves to the land of Israel, that God will promise a redemption from this land. Is it any surprise, therefore, that Yosef's grandchildren, Ephraim's children, are navigating through, are wandering through the land of Israel? And some of them run afoul of Anshei Gat, and so, as a monument to their memory, She'erah builds three cities. Okay. If that's not enough, let's take a look at the cousins of Shevet Ephraim, B'nai Ephraim, and that's B'nai Machir ben Menashe. Same story. We're going to flip now to the other half of Yosef's world, namely the tribe of Menashe. And here again, Pasuk in Bereishit says that Machir ben Menashe was born during the time of Yosef. Yosef l'fayim b'nei shalashim, gam b'nei Machir ben Menashe yildua b'kei Yosef. So the children of Machir ben Menashe were born during the days of Yosef. The Shibud itself doesn't start until after Yosef dies, if you remember. Here is, I'm going to leave these psukim on the Yichus of Menashe for now. I want to take us to a different direction for a second. I want to explore something else. Let's take a look at this story here in Bamidbar Lamed Bet. What's going on in Bamidbar Lamed Bet? Moshe is having a conversation with Reuben and Gad. This is after the conquest of Sichon and Og. If you remember, you know, let's even go back one step further in Chukat. In chapter 21 of Bamidbar, Israel goes to war against, they're not allowed to go to war against Ammon, they're not allowed to go to war against Moab, and so they go around Ammon, Moab, and around Edom, and they end up coming into, let me just show you a map, they end up coming into this region here, which is north of the Arnon River, and south of the Yabok, just opposite Yericho. This is Arvot Moab, more or less, this is where where Moshe's final speech to Bnei Israel is. And as they come up this access from the Yarnon River, they encounter Sichon Melech Ha'emori. Remember the story? They are not allowed to fight against Ammon and Moab, and so they ask Sichon if they can go through his land, and Sichon says no. Sichon says, Vayishlach Yisrael Malachim al Sichon Melech Emori. Lemoy sent a messenger saying, we want to go through your land, Rabbi Yitzchak, lo nitabes derech Kerem, we won't go right or left, we won't veer from derech HaMelech, we just want to go through your land. Velo netan Sichon et Yisrael afor bikvulo, Sichon wouldn't let, Vayesof Sichon et kol amor v'yetzal likrat Yisrael midbara, v'yevo ha-yatza, they took all his army, they come out to the city of Yatza, or Yahaz, which is over here, Yahatz, and the war begins for Yilacham v'Yisrael. The result of this war, Israel is here, and out comes Sichon from the area between the Arnon and the Yabok. This area here was originally the land of Moab, was captured by Sichon, and now became fair ground for conquest because Sichon was a Canaanite king. Vayakeyu Yisrael l'ficharev vayirashet arzo. They took him by the sword, they conquered the land. Notice the geography. Me Arnon ad Yabok. From the Arnon River to the Yabok River. Okay? Where is the Gilad? We talked about the Gilad a moment ago. Where is the Gilad? North of the Yabok. Okay? Everybody with me? North of the Yabok. This land they took from the Arnon River to the Yabok River, more or less from the Dead Sea to just north of Jericho, to is opposite the area of Shechem, that's the area of Sichon, that's what they conquered. And they took all the cities of Sichon. Cheshbon, the city of Cheshbon, which was the capital of Sichon. Ki Cheshbon Yer Sichon, Cheshbon was the capital of, it was the city of Sichon, and it was originally from Moab, but Sichon had conquered it from Moab. Al Ken Yomura Moshlim Bo Cheshbon, Tibanebot Kanin Yer Sichon, this is a famous parable. And if you go a little bit further, we have a list of cities. Vinyam Avad Cheshbon, Ad Divon, we have Cheshbon, we have Divon, we have Nofach, and Medva. These are all cities of, here's Divon, here's Yahatz, here's Rabbah, here's Cheshbon is in there somewhere as well, here's Cheshbon. Okay, these are all Sichon cities. Vayeshev Yisob Eretz Emori. There's also Yazer, which is also in that region, over here, further, a little bit further north. Vayishlach Moshel Ragelet Yazer. All cities of Sichon. Now, I'm going to ask a question. We're not going to answer it right now. I'm just going to plant it. Vayifnu vayalu derech habashan vayetze og melech habashan likratam. They turned their attention northward towards Og, king of Bashan, who came out to wage war with him at Edrei. And the rest of the story we know. Moshe was afraid, and God said, "Don't be afraid." And he conquers Edrei. He conquers Og melech habashan. If you can see this on a map, here is Arnon and the Yabok. Here is the Israelite army. They've just conquered Sichon. They're headed over to cross over the river opposite Jericho. Can you give me a logical, compelling reason why they should take the entire army of Israel and travel all the way north to Edrei, into the Golan, near the into the area of Syria or the Golan today, Eretz Bashan, to conquer Og, king of Bashan? It's not that Og came to them. They turned north first. Vayifnu vayalu derech Bashan. They turned north all the way up to this area. And then Og came out to fight with them at Edrei. Why on earth does Moshe take Bnei Yisrael northward all the way to the Bashan to defeat Og? He's headed westward into the land of Israel. I put that question out there. We'll answer it Bezrat Hashem in a few minutes. But for now, I come back to the Pesukim in Bamidbar. On this map, you can see it a little bit clearer. Here is the Arnon River, Dead Sea, opposite, a little bit south of Hebron. The Yabok River opposite Shechem. The area in between is the area known as the land of Sichon. All of this. And I want to come back to these psukim in Bamidbar. The story of Moshe's conversation with Bnei Gad uBnei Reuven. Fascinating conversation. It's fascinating for several reasons. Not the least being that Menashe is not in this conversation. Moshe has a conversation with Reuven and Gad, and just Reuven and Gad. Umikne Rav haya livnei Reuven v'livnei Gad atzu ma'od. Reuven and Gad had many, had great multitude of livestock. Vayiru et Eretz Ya'zer, that Eretz Gilad, meaning the southern portion of Gilad, we'll see that in a moment. And they saw that this was a place that was great for grazing fields. So they come to Moshe and they make the following request, and they list the cities of cities that they want to settle. Atarot and Divon and Yazer and Nimra and Cheshbon ve'Elale u'Savam u'Nevo ve'On. All of these cities are Eretz Asher Yikar Hashem lefanecha lifnei Adat Yisrael. Eretz Mikneh. This is all grazing, great land for grazing for livestock. And we have livestock. We want to stay here. Now the rest of the story, you know, I'm not going to unpack. It's a whole conversation between Moshe, Reuven, and God. Achachem tavo b'mechama v'atem teshvu po. Your brother's going to go to war. You're going to stay here. They say, no, you misunderstand. We're going to go with them into war and then we'll come back. Okay. I'm not interested in all of that. I'm really just interested in the conversation of what would they want? Where did they want to settle? These cities, Atarot, Divon, Yazer, Nimra, Cheshbon, Elalel, Svam, Nevo, Va'on, all of these cities, more or less, these are all cities in the area of Eretz Sichon. Not all of them are listed here, but many of them are. Or you can see it on this map. Here's Cheshbon. Here's Nevo. Here's Yatzah. Here's Aroer. Here, right? These are cities in this area. They asked to settle in Eretz Sichon. And that's the back and forth Moshe has with them. And in fact, when the land is divided up, where does Moshe place Reuven and Gad? Reuven and Gad are geographically located in what we refer to as the land of Sichon, from the Arnon to the Arbok, the southern region of the Gilad. You can see the mountain range here crosses over the Arbok River. Between the Arbok and the Arnon is the land of Reuven and Gad, two tribes. Should have had Shimon there too, but Shimon lost his Nachla for other reasons. We'll see that later in Sefer Yoshua. Back and forth with Reuven and Gad, back and forth. I'm going to skip all of this, and we're going to go to the end. And we come to the following psukim. Vayanu b'nei Gad u'b'nei Reuven. Notice it's still Gad and Reuven. And they said, Nachnu navor chalutzim, we will go first, we will go fight for the land of Canaan. And we will go and we will take, and then afterwards we will settle here on the other side of the Yarden. And so, Vayiten lahem Moshe livnei Gad livnei Reuven. Moshe gives Reuven and Gad v'lechatzi shevet Menashe, and to a portion, not half. We call it half the tribe of Menashe. That's ridiculous. It's not half the tribe of Menashe. It's a portion of the tribe of Menashe. Moshe gives mamlechet Sichon. He gives Reuven and Gad the territory of the kingdom of Sichon, and he gives Menashe the territory of Mamlechet Og, Melech HaBashan. B'nai Gad went and rebuilt or settled in the cities of Divon, Atarot, Aroer, Atarot, Shofan, Yazer, Yogba, all cities of Sichon. Nimra, Beit Haran. B'nai Reuven, they go to Cheshbon, another city of Sichon. Nevo, all cities of Sichon. And then we come to Pasuk Lamed Tet. Pasuk Lamed Tet says, "Vayelchu bnei Machir ben Menashe Gilada." Bnei Machir ben Menashe, they went up to the Gilad. Vayelkedua, and they took it. Vayoresh et Amoriah Sheba, and they settled in the area where the Amorites were. Vayiten Moshe et haGilad leMachir ben Menashe, and Moshe gave the entire Gilad to Machir ben Menashe. And Ya'ir ben Menashe is another name we haven't come across yet. Halach vayikod et chavotem. He went and he conquered, settled into the area of the Chavot. Vayikud otan Chavot Ya'ir. A bunch of 60 cities known as Chavot Ya'ir. You know what we're talking about? Chavot Ya'ir are up here. Here's Chavot Ya'ir. in the area of the Amok River by the Kinneret. The area of the Bashan of the Gilad goes all the way into the Eretz of the land of the Bashan. Eretz Menashe goes from the Yabok River all the way up to the Golan Heights. So, just to put in perspective, Moshe gives Reuven and Gad, two tribes, this square here, and he gives two families in the family, amongst the families of Menashe, Machir and Yair ben Menashe, he gives from the Yabok River all the way up to the Hermon. Why? What's the key to understanding this whole dialogue? And why the hell does he throw Menashe into the conversation and they heard it? What's he? He's talking to Reuven and Gad. He's not talking to Menashe Bechlal. He's talking to Reuven and Gad, and suddenly he throws in the two tribes of Menashe, Machir ben Menashe, Yair ben Menashe, Chavot Yair. So here a little bit is a conjecture. I have much stronger evidence about Ephraim than I have about Menashe, but I think that it's still very interesting. If you go back to the Psukim in Divrei Hayamim and we start to look at who Menashe is, let's do it here. Chetzron is, going back to earlier generations, Chetzron is the grandson of Yehuda, or son of Yehuda, Chetzron Peretz, marries Vachagba Chetzron El Bat Machir Avi Gilad. She marries the daughter of Machir ben Menashe. Machir is the father of Gilad. They have a child named Skuv. He had 23 cities in the land of Gilad. Who had 23 cities in the land of Gilad and when? We're talking about Machir ben Menashe, Gilad ben Machir ben Menashe. We're talking about Menashe's grandchildren. Have 23 cities in the land of the Gilad? 23 cities? Menashe was still in Egypt. Menashe was born in Mitzrayim. Machir ben Menashe, when he conquered the Gilad, he didn't conquer the Gilad in the days of Moshe. He conquered the Gilad, says Divrei Hayamim, much earlier, in the days of Menashe. Vayikach Geshur ve'Aram et Chavot Yair Meitam, and Geshur and Aram were the locals. Right, here's Geshur in the on the other side of the Kinneret. Right, here's Aram up in Syria. The locals, they took these cities from the Giladites and Yairites from Yair ben Menashe, and these 60 cities called Ela b'nei Machir Avi Gilad. Machir Avi Gilad. We're talking about Menashe's children and grandchildren. In fact, Menashe himself had a Pelegish, an Aramean Pelegish, and she was the one who bore him Machir, who was the father of Gilad. You understand the implication? The implication is, to sort all this out, is that Gilad was settled at the same time that Ephraim was in the area of Shechem and was killed by the people of Gat. Menashe's children and grandchildren are settling in the area of the Gilad and are settling in the area of Chavot Yair, and they're coming to challenge from the local Geshurites and Arameans and other local residents. In other words, Machir and Ben Menashe, Yair Ben Menashe, the two tribes of Menashe, the reason they're on the other side of the Yarden is because they've been on the other side of the Yarden since Yosef was still alive. And while the rest of the tribes are in Egypt, and the rest of the tribes are going through Shibud Mitzrayim, and the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim, and all that entails, there are descendants of Bnei Ephraim who are sitting in the area of Shechem and Har Ephraim, Beit Choron Elyon, Beit Choron Tachton, and there are descendants of Menashe, Yair ben Menashe, and Machir ben Menashe, who are sitting in the land of the Gilad and the land of the Bashan. Maybe, and this is conjecture, but maybe that answers the question of why Moshe turns northward after he conquers Sichon. Because who's north? Not Og who's north. It's a subset of Shevet Menashe that's been sitting there in the north for 400 years waiting for Bnei Yisrael to come back. There are descendants of Bnei Ephraim and Bnei Menashe in the area of the Gilad and the Bashan and Har Ephraim in the area of Shechem waiting for the rest of the tribes to come join them. All of that's taking place during Shibud Mitzrayim, during the time they're in Egypt. A couple of interesting anomalies that can only be explained in this description. For example, Bnei Menashe, in the census in Parsha Bamidbar, Menashe numbers 32,500. In the census in Parsha Pinchas, which is after all of this, Menashe numbers 52,700. Every other tribe stays the same or shrinks. Menashe nearly doubles in size. Why? They went from one of the smallest tribes to one of the biggest tribes. Because they've already reconnected with all of the Bnei Menashe that are sitting up here in the north and that have been there through all for 400 years. Bnei Ephraim are one of the smallest tribes. Ephraim in the census in Bamidbar is 40,500. 40 years later in the census in Parshat Pinchas, Ephraim's even smaller. They're 32,500. But if you look at the conversation in Sefer Yehoshua, chapter 17, Pasuk Yedaled, Bnei Yosef come to Yeshua and they say, why have you only given us one portion, one nachla goral achad, v'ani am rav ad asher ad ko b'chan Yeshem, and I am a great multitude of nations. V'yomer aleihem Yeshua, am rav ata, if you are so great and so many, ale lecha yaro, v'yireta lecha shem be'eretz ha'priziv ha'rafaim, ki atz lecha ha'rafaim, if ha'rafaim is too small for you, so go up in the mountain and take the land of the priziv, the land of Rafaim. Right? And they have to spread out because they're too small for that area. You are a great nation, great size, great power. Go and take the land that belongs to you. So they went from being one of the smallest tribes to being one of the largest tribes just by coming into the land of Israel. Yes, because there's been Ephraim that they had to rejoin with and connect with in the area of Shechem. Consider for a moment the fact that when Moshe brings Bnei Israel to Arvot Moav, he reenacts the entire covenant of Sinai. The Tochacha, the Brit at Sinai, he reenacts it in Arvot Moav. And then he does it again in Har Gerizim and Har Ebal in Shechem. Why? Why does he need to reenact the Brit three times? Is it because there were grandchildren and descendants of the tribe of Menashe on the east side of the Jordan that weren't at Har Sinai and have now joined after the battle of, have liberated after the war with Og and need to reenact the Brit? And there are descendants of Ephraim that are sitting in the area of Shechem that have not been part of the tribes of Israel and were not part of Yitzhak Mitzrayim and were not part of Har Sinai, and they need to be brought into the Brit? And so Moshe has to reenact the Brit twice, once in Avot Moab for Bnei Menashe and once in Har Gerizim and Arevo for Bnei Ephraim. Where does all this lead us? Where all this leads, I'm going to stop sharing my screen for a moment. Where all this leads us to, fascinating, is the suggestion that the reason Menashe and Ephraim are the tribes that lead, and the reason why Bnei Ephraim, of the two, right, Yaakov chose Ephraim over Menashe, of the two, Ephraim and the Nasi of Shevet Ephraim, the grandson of the Nasi of Shevet Ephraim, is the one who's going to lead them into the land of Israel, beyond his own merit, which we'll explore and we'll read about and we'll learn about next week, may be also a factor that the two tribes that have had the greatest connection to the land of Israel throughout the last 400 years of the Shibud in Egypt have been Ephraim and Manasseh. Dafka Yosef, who is the only one of the children of Israel who was forced into exile. The rest all went willingly. Yosef was the only one who was taken from the land of Israel and forced down to Egypt. Yosef is the one who instilled in his brothers the requirement to go back to the land of Israel. Yosef is the one who instilled in his children the sense, the understanding that they belong in the land of Israel. And Ephraim and Manasseh, princes of Egypt, have free reign. They have free access. They're the only ones who do. And suddenly we're told about descendants of Ephraim and descendants of Manasseh who are sitting in the region waiting for the rest of Israel to return. So who's going to lead Bnei Israel into the land of Israel? If not, a member of the tribes of Yosef's household. Because Yosef, more than anything else, Yosef represents that connection to the return to the land of Israel. That is part one. Understand why it's not even so much a function of Yoshua as much as it's a function of Shevet Ephraim is going to lead them into the land of Israel. From within Shevet Ephraim, Yoshua ben Nun, that part of the story we'll explore next week. I will stop here, and if there are questions, I'll be happy to try to address them.
Rabbi Shulman, two questions, please. The first is, remember that Yosef was viceroy for 68 years after the end of the famine. So that he was able to, his kids were able to put together a militia in order to go back to Eretz Yisrael, which is why the story makes sense. On the other hand, Tzlofchad is from the family of Machir. And if Machir went back to Eretz Yisrael, how did Tzlofchad remain in the desert? How did the whole story of Tzlofchad take place?
Right. So I actually think that that's part of the power of this theory, is that the reason of all of the tribes to express a desire to take land and to have land in the land of Israel, it's Machir's great-great-great-grandchildren. But Tzlofchad is from a further generation down. So I'm not suggesting that all of Bnei Machir are in the land of Gilad, or all of Bnei Ephraim are there. It's possible they went back and forth. They encountered challenges at various times, but they are possibly that there's subsets. Bnei Machir, which Bnei Machir? We don't know, right? But Tzlofchad is from a descendant of Machir ben Manasseh. So that per se doesn't challenge this theory, but it does add to the zika, the connection between Ephraim and Manasseh to the land of Israel, that is stronger than other tribes.
Rabbi Shulman,
yeah.
You were asking why Yoshua, who's from Ephraim, rather than Kalev, who's from Yehuda. You think there could be some connection to the idea of Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David?
Yes, it's possible, but I think it's too esoteric for me. Meaning, on a much broader scale, you have the notion that Yosef prepares the physical. Yosef, it's more connected to the notion of Machut Ephraim and Machut Yehuda, but there's this notion that Yosef limchiyash lachani alechem prepared for the physical sustenance of Israel, and Yehuda is more spiritual. It could also be connected to Shaul from Binyamin, maybe. But I think that on the level of the Pshat level of Tanakh, those are concepts that get I have a hard time navigating them into the Pshat of what's going on. I think there's certainly some truth to it, right? Just like in Egypt, Yosef prepared for them for physically, so too the coming to the land of Israel, Yosef will be the one to lead them and conquer, and eventually they will end up with Malchus from Yehuda, although they have to go through Binyamin first. So that's another question altogether.
Rabbi Shulman.
Certainly possible.
Rabbi Shulman.
Yeah.
Joseph was the person who was responsible for Bnei Israel coming down to Mitzrayim,
yes.
And therefore he took steps even to get some out of Mitzrayim in his lifetime. It makes absolute sense.
Right.
Shaltar
Right. And I think the fact that Ephraim and Manasseh had free rein access back and forth makes sense. There's other indications of it too, but for now, this will, I think this will be sufficient.
Rabbi Shulman?
Yes, sir.
Does anyone speculate? It's IPAT Toronto. There's no figure.
Okay.
Does anyone speculate on who the families that were in Eretz Yisrael or Eretz Canaan during the 400 or 200 and whatever year exile, who they married? Because unless you're saying that there was just a tight intermarriage amongst them, were they marrying the local Canaanites? Does anyone speculate on that?
There's no laws pertaining to marriage pre-Matan Torah anyway, and in terms of...
No, I understand, but I just wanted... Is there... So they intermarried with the locals and still stayed separate?
Probably. I can't say for sure. But don't forget... I'll give you an example. Don't forget in Shechem... We'll come back to this idea when we get to Chapter 8. Bnei Ephraim are in the area of Shechem. When Yeshua enters the land of Israel, he has a battle with Yericho, and he has a battle of Ai, and he has a battle south in Yerushalayim, and he'll have a battle up north. He marches the entire camp of Israel all the way to Shechem. There's not a single battle anywhere in Har Ephraim. In the 31 kings that are listed in the book of Yeshua, the 31 Canaanite kings that he has to conquer that are listed as conquered in that area. There's no reference to the king of Shechem as somebody who he had to conquer. It would seem that the area around Shechem was friendly to the Israelites entering the land of Israel. Why? Unclear. I could connect it back to Yaakov and to the Brit Milah with the house of Shechem, or possibly that this is the area that Ephraim was sitting in, that these were locals, these were Israelite connected.
As they say, that's a nice hop.
Right?
So,
they don't,
as they say, it's a nice cup.
One second. They don't become part of the Jewish people until after the Brit. And the Brit is in Sefer Yehoshua.
Did these families have a greater sense of Nevuah than everybody else? Because you said they're waiting 400 years for their brethren to return. That implies a sense of Nevuah that nobody else seemed to have.
I don't think that they're counting 400 years. I think they're just understood that they are children of Yaakov, and when the Israelites come back to the land, they connect with
how
them.
How did they know they would come back? That still
maybe
implies Nevuah.
Maybe they didn't. I don't know. But they certainly identified themselves as descendants of Yaakov. Whether they thought they were going to come back, didn't think they were going to come back, I don't know. But Yosef had a promise. Remember, Yosef was the one who told his children and his brothers, "Pakod yifkod l'lakim etchem." So before Ephraim and Manasseh come back to the land of Israel, Yosef has already instilled in his brothers and his children that there will come a time when we will come back to the land of Israel. That was a promise from Yosef's time. And God promised that to Yaakov. I will take you down. I will bring you back. So they had a Masoret, they had a notion that there was, Bnei Ephraim, Bnei Manasseh left earlier, they had this notion that, you know, that the tribes would eventually come home, but I couldn't tell you when or what they thought. We don't know. We don't have other evidence to speculate over other than what I've shared with you, little hints at this over the course of the story. Okay. All right, we will adjourn here. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for joining us. Next week, Bezrat Hashem, we will continue with a little more about Yeshua the man, and we'll go from there.